Welcome back to Midnight in the Mountains. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing fantastic this night. Enjoying the fake spring weather here, that's for sure.
Yeah. You want to tell everybody about that?
I don't know. Am I going to get some hate mail if I say anything about it? Because it was 75 degrees here today.
That's kind of ridiculous.
It was really ridiculous. I didn't even have to wear a jacket after 9 a.m. this morning. It was fantastic. Bright blue skies, no wind, just nice and warm. And tomorrow is supposed to be the same way as today. So I am looking forward to a little bit of warm weather after all the snow that we've had over the past couple weeks.
Yep, not me. I had my layers on, hat on, gloves.
Yeah, no gloves today. But I probably could have wore shorts today, to be honest. But this morning when I went to work, it was 45 this morning, I guess. That's a little chilly to be wearing shorts for that temperature.
But you know what, though? If it's going to be cold, I'd rather it be cold and be snowing rather than, I don't know. I like winter. I don't want it to go into summer just yet, but.
No, I completely agree there. Like, I like my cold time because, you know, one thing that I've always been told is, you know, in the wintertime, you can always put more clothes on. In the summertime, mm-hmm. you could only take so much off before the cops get involved. Yep. So.
Oh my God.
No, I mean, like I said, I'm from Michigan. You know, I spent a ton of time sledding and building igloos and snow skiing and snowmobiling and four wheeling. So I enjoy the wintertime. And it doesn't usually last long enough. I mean, before. It'll probably be another 6 weeks and it's going to be 90 degrees or at least the 80 degree mark. You know, usually sometime in March, we'll hit 80 degrees sometime in March.
Okay, that's disgusting. I'm not jealous of you at all.
No. But, you know, at the same point, when it gets July and it's 100 degrees here with 100% humidity, where you just like, you step outside, it's like being in an oven. You don't.
Gross.
Yeah. See, you don't deal with that very often.
Hello, it's Pennsylvania. We have humidity all the time in the summer.
Yeah, do you have 100 degrees?
No. Once in a while, though.
So, yeah. I'm not trying to say it's worse here, but it sucks.
It's no, not it fun. Probably, yeah, it's worse there.
It's not fun. But I did have something very interesting, as some of our listeners know. I went to New Orleans last weekend. And a side note, I think I've said many times that I am from Michigan. The Lions lost last weekend, and I am still a little heartbroken about it.
I'm sorry.
I'm pushing on. I'm going to move on with my life, but I'm still very sad about it. On the more important news is I did go to New Orleans for the weekend. It was the first time I went. It wasn't quite what I expected.
I was going to ask you that, if it was what you expected it to be.
Not really. I mean, now I will have to say, while we were down there, for the weekend, it was a little on the cooler side for New Orleans. At nighttime, it was down in the upper 40s. So it was a little cooler than what you would imagine a very southern city would be like. And we got there Friday morning, about 11 a.m. We got to where we were staying, which was in the French Quarter, which is downtown. And when we get there, there's no traffic on the roads. There's no people walking around. And we get to the hotel and we park, and I got out and I was with some friends of mine, and I was like, is this what it's always like here? I said, this city seems like it's dead. And they were like, it really wasn't like this last time. It was a little busier. But I think what we discovered was that New Orleans doesn't really wake up till about 2 p.m. Because at 2 p.m., the streets, everybody was walking around. There was a ton of cars on the road. By 5 p.m., gridlock traffic everywhere, people everywhere.
Really?
Yeah, it was the strangest thing that for being like a super major city and us in the most touristy spot in the city on Friday, there was nobody. It was just dead. It was almost like walking through like the zombie apocalypse, you know, where like the all the streets are empty. Like there was literally nobody walking around at noon on a Friday. It was a very weird feeling.
That's the strangest thing I ever heard.
Yeah. I don't have any good answers other than they must have been partying really hard Thursday night. And New Orleans does party.
Apparently.
They party. They know how to party. They they really do. Unfortunately, we were only there for like 2 full days. We were there Friday, Saturday. We had to come back on Sunday. But the feeling of the city, it's very strange because you can tell it's a very old city. And, you know, the downtown area is, you know, a lot newer. But like when you get out to the like the Garden District, those houses out there, they're just like the old Southern style mansions, I guess, or whatever. It is just so interesting to see that architecture and to see the crepe myrtles and see the big magnolia trees and the live oaks that are just...
See the who?
Huh?
See the what?
See the crepe myrtles and magnolia trees.
What are you saying? Crepe myrtle? Ooh.
Crepe myrtles. They're a very Southern tree.
Oh.
They bloom really pretty flowers. You can get them in white, lavender, red, dark pink, light pink. But yeah, no, I forget that you guys don't have crepe myrtles up there. It's a very Southern staple. Like we have them here in Tennessee, Alabama, okay. Georgia, Florida, Louisiana, Arkansas. Any Southern state can grow crepe myrtles. They really like heat. They really like humidity. They're really, really pretty. Another Southern staple. And then New Orleans has something that Tennessee does not have, and it's called a live oak. And they get absolutely monstrosity big. I went to a park there that had an 800-year-old live oak.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think
you sent me a picture of that.
Yep, I sent you a picture, and I look like a little twig compared to how big this tree is. I mean, it is just absolutely ginormous. And if you think about it, you know, 800 years ago would have put it at what? The 1224? Like 1224? So back when the Crusades were going to the Middle East, this tree was a sapling down in New Orleans. That's how old it is. You know, the sites that we went to go see, I really wanted to do one of the ghost tours while we were down there. Unfortunately, it just didn't work out time-wise that we could do that. However, I did get to go to, it's called St. Louis Cemetery Number 1. And I guess there's multiple ones. This is one of the older ones. And some people may...
I think it's actually the first one in New Orleans.
It is. It was the...
I did a little research.
It is the oldest one. It does have the oldest grave, I believe, is from 1789. I believe is what they said, because it was right around the founding of the United States was when the first person was buried there. Of course, the United States was founded in 1776, and it was right after that that the first person was interred there. And for those of you that don't know, New Orleans is mostly below sea level, which means that when they go to bury their dead, they can't dig into the ground, because if they dig into the ground, they're just going to find water because of how close they are to the Gulf of Mexico. So they bury their dead in these tombs that are above ground. They're kind of like a mausoleum almost. But when we went to the cemetery, you can't just go to the cemetery. You have to go and buy tickets. You have to have a tour guide because there were so many people vandalizing them. So
yeah, I heard the same thing.
So all the cemeteries are owned by the Catholic Church in New Orleans, or maybe not all of them, but like all the major ones are owned by the Catholic Church. And the Catholic Church said that now you have to have a tour guide so nobody defaces any property. But these mausoleums, it's kind of interesting. So when a family goes to buy a mausoleum, they basically own it. It's kind of like property almost. Whereas, you know, that's theirs until they sell it. So there's some mausoleums there that are just complete disrepair. Nobody's been buried there in 200 years. And nobody knows who actually owns it because, you know, that family that initially bought it, the Catholic Church may or may not have kept up with who actually owns it today. So if you said, oh, hey, my family is buried there, you would have to prove that the last person buried there was in your family tree, like is a direct descendant of yours before you can take control of it, which I thought was kind of interesting because, you know, some of those, I mean, what if the family died out? Like, are they ever going to find out? Like, and the only way you can transfer it is if the current relatives of whoever the last person that was buried there will actually sell it to somebody else. Otherwise, it's yours in like forever. You know, it's just yours. So it's kind of weird. So when you walk through there, there'll be like this immaculate marble mausoleum that's, you know, pristine white. And the one next to it's like completely falling apart. And the one next to that's completely falling apart. And then you'll have another one that's like, you know, in decent shape, whatever. So it's a real, it's kind of interesting to see that kind of thing. And then something else I learned. So the question came up while we were on the tour is like, so if a family has it, you know, how does that work? You know, so let's say the father dies. So the father dies, he's in, the casket's put into the mausoleum. That mausoleum is then sealed up and cannot be opened for 1 year and 1 day. After 1 year and 1 day, when the next relative is to be put in there, they unseal it, they pull out the casket, they take all the remains that are left in there, they shove them all the way to the back of the mausoleum, and then they put the new casket in, seal it up for a year and a day.
Why? Well, what happens if somebody else passes away within less than a year?
Excellent question. And that question was asked down there. So they have a wall, I guess is the best way to describe it, like all the way around the cemetery. That wall is 10 feet wide. So if your family owns a mausoleum in there and it has not been over a year and a day, you have to rent a place in the wall to put yourself for a year and a day, and then you get transferred to your own mausoleum after that.
Okay, but why can't it be opened up? I don't get it.
For whatever reason, and he never really, nobody really asked it, and it was never really given a reason. It was just said, that's the way it is. Like, it has to be sealed up for a year and a day. He kind of made it feel like to let the body decay. You know, so it was like mostly bones at that point. So they're not like just shoving, you know, like body parts in the back. It's mostly, which to be fair, after a year and a day, the body is not going to be completely decomposed anyways. I don't think.
Aren't they in, okay, first of all, hold on a second. Aren't they in caskets and aren't you embalmed? So doesn't it take longer to, this is such a bad conversation.
I don't really have an answer for that, you know, because I didn't really think about it while we were walking through there. But, you know, typically, yes, you are embalmed. So you're probably not completely decomposed within a year and a day. On the other hand, they've been doing this in New Orleans for 300 years. I'm going to kind of, well, almost 300 years, not quite, you know, let's say 250 years. There must be a pretty good reason why you have to wait a year and a day, right? They're not just, I don't think it's just because that's what we say. That's what has to be done. Yeah, so the question came up about, you know, what happens if the whole family dies? Let's say there's a car accident and you have four family members that go in that mausoleum. So basically the family has to rent four spots in the wall or three spots in the wall. The oldest relative will get put in the mausoleum. The other three go in the wall and then they get transferred one at a time back to the mausoleum after their year and a day of interment.
That's so strange.
It's a very unique way of doing it, right? I'm kind of curious to see if they do that in Europe, like maybe France or, because, you know,
maybe
in France, you know, they have all those catacombs underneath Paris with all the remains. There's catacombs and catacombs and catacombs underneath Paris that are just full of human remains, like skulls and bones and all that, because that's where everybody was buried back then.
I watched a YouTube video on these explorers that I follow talk about freaking feeling like anxious and claustrophobic the whole time watching the freaking video. I'll have to send it to you when we're done with this. It's like, oof.
I can only imagine, like I could never do, like, I saw the video about like cave diving and like spelunking.
Hell no.
Nah.
Oh my God, that shit. Oh, I'm just like anxious just thinking about it because I'm picturing the cave diving where you have to like hold your breath and go down these little skinny little alcoves or whatever, and it's like, oh my God, if you got you get stuck and panic. Oh,
nope, no thank you. I'm not an adrenaline junkie like that. Like, no thank you. You know, there are some people in the world that really like to be challenged and they thrive on that kind of stuff, so I'm not gonna hate on them as long as they understand the risks. And you know, you do you.
Yeah, you do you, boo-boo.
You do you, boo. So one of the more famous mausoleums inside the cemetery is currently unoccupied, actually. It is Nicolas Cage's mausoleum.
I told you he bought that house in New Orleans and, like, okay, I'll let you talk, but there's a story that goes with it.
Yeah.
You correct me. You tell me what you heard. The story I heard was that he bought his plot in the cemetery to confuse the spirits so that they would leave him alone in the house.
So I heard that part, but I also heard another one that his uncle.
Oh, but we should also say, sorry, we didn't, if you didn't listen to the first one, the first New Orleans episode we did, it was the LaLaurie mansion that he had bought. And then he lived there for a while, and then he sold it because it was just, like, too much for him. So anyways.
So there was two reasons that the tour guide gave. One of them was that his, and correct me if I'm wrong, his uncle is Francis Ford Coppola, which is the very famous director. He did The Godfather and the sequels of The Godfather. Very, very famous, very rich guy. He owned a house in New Orleans, and his nephew, Nicolas Cage, which would have been Nicolas Coppola, actually, spent all his summers in New Orleans. And that's one of the reasons that he initially bought that house, was because he had such fond memories of his uncle. And that's why he was also wanted to be buried in New Orleans. So that's why he bought that plot from the Catholic Church.
Oh, okay.
So it could be a little bit of both, to be fair, right?
Right. But you choose the LaLaurie mansion out of any place in New Orleans?
Yeah, well, I didn't ever say he was a smart guy. I'm just saying that, you know, he bought a plot down there. It could have been a little bit of both, right? Because they didn't give a timeline on, you know, when he bought the mansion versus the plot. You know, and I honestly, we could probably look it up, but I don't actually know you know, the timeline behind that. But his plot looks 100% different than everything else in there. So all the rest of them.
Really?
Yeah. So all the rest of them in there kind of look like a rectangle, like a roof over the top of it. You know, maybe kind of flowing. You know, some of them are marble, some of them are brick. His is a pyramid.
What?
His is an Egyptian pyramid, basically, in the middle of the cemetery.
Oh, that's weird.
It stands out. Like, as soon as I saw it, I was like, that's it. I know it's got to be that one because it is the most, I don't want to say the most unique because there are a couple other ones in there that I'll talk about in a second that are a lot different than, say, a normal family's mausoleum. But yeah, it's very unique. It does not have his name on it. It has a plaque on the side, but it's written in Latin. So you can't, unless you read Latin, you wouldn't know what it says. And the tour guide never really actually said what it said. I mean, you can recognize Latin. It has like the, what do they call it? The all-seeing eye that's on the pyramid. It's on the front of
okay.
it.
Okay. Hold on. My conspiracy brain, when you said pyramid, I was like, he's in the fucking Illuminati. Because he's a freaking celebrity. Don't get me started down that rabbit hole. And now you just brought it
I'm
up.
Just pushing the bear. Just pushing the buttons. Pushing them.
All right, go ahead. Continue, please.
To talk a little bit more about it. So these mausoleums are designed so that, you know, when you take the casket out, there's room on the backside of it to push all the remains all the way to the back. But his pyramid is so at such an oblique angle that it doesn't look like there'd be enough room to push remains all the way to the back, which was a little weird to me.
Maybe he's just doing himself.
Possibly. Usually, though, mausoleums are for fam. Like, it's a family thing. But maybe he just bought it for himself. It's possible.
So, I did a little quick search on the Googs here, and it says Cage at 56 procured the tomb back in 2010 for his future funeral. It's 9 feet and inscribed with Latin words, Omnia ab uno, which means everything from one. The tomb is in St. Louis I, which is the oldest cemetery in New Orleans.
Ugh.
Hmm.
What a good guess.
Well, here's a picture of him visiting his tomb. Actually, I think it's just photoshopped, but it sure looks funny as hell. I'm definitely posting this in the show notes.
Nice.
You were not kidding. This is like, it's like spaceship looking.
Yeah. It's not like, so, like, Egyptian pyramids are, I think, more upright than what his is. His is like almost like a flattened pyramid. Like, it's very short with very wide angles to it. It's a unique experience for sure. I mean, it was very out of place. Because, so here's the other thing about this. So he had, since that plot of land is owned by the Catholic Church, you have to buy the plot from the, he had to buy it from somebody because somebody already owned that plot. But here's the interesting part. If you want to build your own mausoleum, you have to get permission from the Catholic Church and they have to approve the plans for your mausoleum. You can't just build whatever you want. So the Catholic bishop who lived across the street from this cemetery, who's in charge of the cemetery, had to approve that pyramid being built in the middle of the cemetery.
I mean, yeah, I guess I could understand that.
I will say everybody to go visit. It was only $25 for the tour. It takes about 45 minutes. But some of the other things that are interesting about the cemetery is there are in New Orleans, I forget the word that he used, but the best way to describe it are there are guilds in New Orleans. Like, for instance, the Musician Guild. So they have a communal tomb for people part of the Musician Guild. So if you don't have any place to be buried and you're part of the Musician Guild, they have a very large mausoleum that you can be buried at. It just depends on the guild. Like, some of them, you know, you have to pay entrance for it. The Musicians Guild was actually free because there was a couple of artists, I don't remember their names, but there was a couple of artists that basically put up a ton of money so that any musician in New Orleans could always be buried there and they don't have to pay anything for it. So these mausoleums, some of them hold 16 tombs, some of them 8. The biggest one, I believe, was 32 tombs, if memory serves me correctly. It was a very, very large circular. So I guess it was like 25 feet tall, give or take. So there was 3 tombs, and then it kind of went all the way around the circumference of it. And we asked the guy, if they're all full, what happens? And he's like, well, this never happened before because there's so many of them in there. And after a year and a day, they could open it up. And they basically push all the remains into the center of the circle. Here's the weird part about this. This wasn't the Musician Guild. I think this one was like the like for the common person. Like, anybody can be put in there. There was actually on one side a door that led into where the remains go. But check this out. There was a knocker on the door. Like, tap, tap, tap. And we were like, why is there a knocker on the door to get into the remains of this huge mausoleum? And he says, you can't see this, but this is me shrugging my shoulders. That's what he told us. We're like, nobody knows why there's a knocker on the door.
I thought you meant it was on the inside for, like, you know how we had talked about the being saved by the bell kind of thing? Mm-hmm. All that stuff? I thought that's what that was about, but it's on the outside.
It's on the outside.
That's very strange.
It was a little weird, but he also told a story that... And I mentioned this earlier, you know, you have to have a tour guide to go through this all the cemeteries.
Right.
The actual, and it was because vandalism, but the thing that, the straw that broke the camel's back, per se, was there was a movie, I want to think it was called Driven. It was back in the 70s. And it was about a couple guys that lived in California. They wanted to drive their motorcycles over to Mardi Gras. And they ran into all kinds of problems. And when they got to the city, they hired a couple of prostitutes. And they thought it would be fun to go and hang out in St. Louis Cemetery. So they filmed the movie in St. Louis Cemetery. And they did a lot of things the Catholic Church did not like so much. They were up on top of some of the mausoleums. They were naked.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, it was a lot of bad things. And they didn't find out about it until the movie was released. And there was, so the Catholic Church basically said, well, we're never going to have that happen again. Everybody has to be a tour guide. They have the doors all locked up after 4 p.m. And I think, I want to say it was Dustin Hoffman. And there was another famous actor that was in that. I should have took notes, but I didn't think about it at the time.
Yeah, what the hell, Aaron? You should have took notes.
I know. I should have just recorded him. But regardless. But yeah, so Hollywood is the one that screwed up going to see the cemeteries. Thank you, Hollywood. All in for the almighty dollar. Let's see. What else did I see? Oh, the Voodoo Queen of New Orleans.
Yes. I was going to ask.
What's her name?
Marie Laveau.
Marie Laveau. So Marie Laveau actually has two mausoleums in this particular one. So
really?
There's the one that everybody knows about, which is towards the front. Right. They actually have it like a fence around it, so you can't actually touch it. You can't do anything with it. And a couple places on this particular one, it has three X's on it. And we asked the tour guide, you know, why are there three X's on this? He's like, I'm not going to tell you right now. We'll get back to that a little bit later. Okay. So we walked a little bit deeper in the cemetery, past Nicolas Cage, past all the communal ones. And we come to a very, very modest mausoleum. And it's one of the older ones. And that is where Marie Laveau is actually buried. So the other one is...
Really?
Yeah, she's not buried in the one that everybody thinks. And this one actually has even more X's, and you can tell they are older ones. So what everybody used to do before the Catholic Church closed the cemetery is they would go over there on Marie Laveau's mausoleum. I'm going to go off memory. It was, they would mark one X, they would turn around, mark one X, do something else. I forget what the other thing was. Mark one X, do something else, mark one X. And she was supposed to grant your... whatever you were wishing for, you know, when you went home. And our tour guide told us this story. The story was, is that he'd lived in New Orleans his whole life, and his girlfriend, or well, it was a girl he was went out with for the first time, lived near the cemetery, and she wanted to go to Marie Laveau's and do the ritual. So he'd never been before, and so he followed this girl who he just met. They're on their first date. They go to the cemetery. They both do the little ritual. And she asked him what he wished for. And it was funny. He's like, well, I can't actually tell you what I wished for because there's kids here. But most of you adults know what I'm talking about. And we went, oh, yeah. Right. and he never asked what she wished for. They never talked about it after that date. He ended up marrying this woman. They were married for 46 years. And after they both retired, they both become tour guides at this particular cemetery. And not long after they started there, they were, I would assume they were walking together. And he asked her, he said,
oh no.
He said, you know, what did you wish for? You never told me what you wished for. And she's like, well, I wish that you would become my husband. And so he was like, oh my, I don't know if he ever told her what he wished for. He probably did at some point, but he didn't say that. There is kind of a sad part is that she had passed away about 18 months ago. And he still did the cemetery tours. He does, I think he said he does it like 2 days a week. And he said he just likes going through and showing people all the historical significance of it and to just tell his story. Which, you know, it is a sad story, but it's also kind of it's kind of interesting because if you think about it, there's probably a lot of stories about that cemetery for a lot of different families. But yeah, so that was, you know, kind of a very personal story from the cemetery. And then after that, we saw, so we were walking back towards the gate and the newest tomb or the newest mausoleum is located next to the oldest mausoleum. I'm not exactly sure how that happened. Sounds planned, but may or may not be. So the oldest mausoleum is in complete disrepair. You can't tell. I mean, it's almost a pile of rubble, honestly. But that's where that first person was buried in the 1780s. The newest one is actually an obelisk. If you know what an obelisk is, it's basically like a four-sided rectangle that's very tall with a pyramid cap on top of it. And what struck me so weird about that one is what it said on the side. So the obelisk, it's very weird because what's written on the obelisk doesn't even look like English to me. However, it does have a trademark symbol behind it. Like what's written on the obelisk doesn't make any sense. Like it says, I mean, I don't know if, I would assume that's N... E with the accent mark over it. And then it says TM, like a trademark symbol. Then G, E with accent and a trademark symbol. And then D, E with accent symbol and a trademark. So I don't know if that's like a family thing. Because underneath it, I have
no idea.
Yeah, I don't either. But it was really, really weird. And behind that, you can see that's what the normal, that'd be like a normal mausoleum back behind it. And the older one is actually, I didn't get it in the photo, but it's to the right of this one. But yeah, it was a super cool like place to kind of visit and go through the tour. I wish we could have had time to go to some of the other ones just to see, like, you know, are they all exactly the same? Are they a little different? I will say that one of the other stories the tour guide told us was that the Louisiana Superdome, which are where the New Orleans Saints play, is actually located on where the cemetery used to be. They actually moved the cemetery to build a Superdome. So they always say that when the Saints play there, if they win, it's because the spirits were happy with them. And when they lose, the spirits were unhappy with them. So they always have an excuse.
Haven't we learned? Haven't we learned anything?
Well,
for God's sakes.
I think, you know, the one thing to keep in mind here is the Catholic Church did approve of that. Like, it wasn't like they just pushed the people off. Like, where I'm going with this is that it wasn't like they just walked in there and said, "That's ours. Move your shit. You know, we're taking it." Like, the Catholic Church said, "Hey, we'll help you, you know, actually move these people respectfully to a better place." And then, you know, whatever. So now whether that's true or not, I have no idea. Everything else you told us was true. So I would assume that is. Yeah, it's a little weird.
It's very weird.
Yes.
All right. Well, what else did you get into?
So what else did I get into? We went to the World War II Museum, which I'll just touch on that for a second. Probably if you're interested in World War II, it is by far the largest World War II museum I've ever saw in my life. It has three large buildings with three floors on it.
Wow.
Me and my friends, they went there. We spent roughly 4.5 hours, and that was us rushing. And I'm pretty sure we missed a floor or two because, to be fair, it's not laid out that well.
Holy crap, that's you rushing? My goodness.
Yeah, there was so much to read and so much to see. And they had like, we didn't even watch the movies. They had two movies. Both of them were an hour long, right, that we could have watched. Didn't watch either one of the movies. But they dealt with everything from like Hitler's rise in the 1930s all the way up to like, you know, the creation of Israel, the Holocaust, and then what happened to Germany afterwards, like the Berlin Wall. And it was just a very in-depth. They had a lot of like real personal touches, like different people that were in the war. If you like museums in World War II, definitely, definitely check it out. Just make sure you have lots of time because it is a very large museum. I also went to Audubon Park, which is near Tulane University, near the Garden District. And very, very beautiful park. They have a ton of live oaks and they have a huge pond with a million ducks in it. That's where I saw the Tree of Life, which is the 800-year-old tree. I don't think I've ever saw a tree that large outside of pictures. I mean, it was that large. But it was a beautiful park. And we went there. It was really nice out during the day. It was probably like 60 degrees during the day. Very, very cool thing. So Mardi Gras, I believe, is going to be on February 11th or February 13th. Because we're getting so close to Mardi Gras, they started having their parades the weekend that I was there. I'm just going to touch on the parades because they were just – the first night was pretty tame. The second night was out of control. It was very political, very sexual. And I'll just leave it at that. You should see a parade in New Orleans. They do it up. It was really, really cool. The floats were really neat. The people were even more interesting because there are some interesting characters in New Orleans.
I mean, that's like the pre-party. Can you imagine how nuts Mardi Gras actually is?
So the parade I went to on Friday night, I mean, there were people there. It was busy, but it wasn't like Saturday night. It was busy. I mean, it was shoulder to shoulder down the whole parade route. There was people lining up like 2 hours before the parade got there, you know, to see it. I can only imagine what the Mardi Gras one's like the actual big one, because it is probably insane. You know, like a, you think mm-hmm. like Macy's Day Parade, you know, Christmas Parade.
Or like Times Square, New Year's Eve.
Exactly. Just absolutely crazy insane. And then Saturday night, we ended up on Bourbon Street. You know, that's where the parties are. The first place we stopped at, it was called Lafayette's Blacksmith Shop, Piano Bar and Lounge. Supposedly the most haunted bar on all of Bourbon Street.
Really?
Yes. Now, so we got there. So it was about 8 o'clock. It wasn't crazy busy, but there was, still quite a few people there. I didn't see anything too weird. The ladies that we were with, they went to the bathroom, and I asked them if anything weird happened. They said just some drunk girl came out without her underwear on. So
that's nice. Yeah.
So, nothing too crazy. But New Orleans, like, I could see, even though it wasn't that crazy that night, I could see Mardi Gras being just an absolute insane once-in-a-lifetime experience. Like, 100%. Like, the videos you see on TV of what Mardi Gras looks like, I could absolutely see it there. Like, the bars would be packed. There's all these hotels, like, lining the streets with balconies. And, even on the Saturday night before Mardi Gras, there were still people out there throwing beads and whatnot. I'll say one other thing is that if you go to New Orleans, just be prepared that there are a lot of homeless people there. There are a lot of people panhandling, trying to sell you trinkets and things like that. And I've been told by people that in the summertime that it basically stinks, like really Ooh. Bad, because they are close to the ocean. They are below sea level. There's a ton of people spilling a ton of different beverages. When I was there, I didn't see that, but it was 41 degrees outside. It was fairly cold out. I didn't smell anything too weird, but I could see how it could get kind of ripe in the summertime.
Yeah.
But next year, I want to go see the mansion that Nicolas Cage bought. I didn't get to see it this time, but I really want to go see that one. Supposedly, Anne Rice, the vampire novelist, had a mansion in New Orleans.
Didn't you say that you like read her books or something?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The Interview with a Vampire and the Vampire Lestat and the Mayfair Witches. I've read almost all of them, I think, at one point or another. But supposedly she has most of her vampire novels are all based in New Orleans at some point or another. I can see why. 100% I can see why. Like when you read like her descriptions of like how the houses look, especially the Garden District, you could see how she came up with that. Like, there's just a ton of those old houses with like 100-year-old oaks, and like it was just it was really cool. It was really, really cool. That's really about it. I didn't really have any paranormal things happen to me. I didn't have anything fly off the walls. No knocking on the door. I told Laura before I went there, I was like, I didn't look at the hotel before I went there to see if it was haunted or not. And I wasn't going to look until I got back. And I think Laura looked for me and she said it wasn't one of the ones that was.
Yeah. Out of all of New Orleans, you have to pick the one place that people are saying it's not even haunted. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Now, you could tell that the hotel I stayed at was an older building. I mean, it has some age to it, 100%. But you could also tell, like, it was a fairly – they tried to modernize it. It was a Marriott. So, I mean, they tried to modernize it some. But it was a very cool hotel. I mean, it is a very cool city. I would love to go there and spend a week because I absolutely could find a week's worth of stuff to do there. But, yeah, I mean, it was a good time.
And if you hear a pig snorting, that's Aaron's dog.
Yeah. I have a French bulldog, and sometimes they get a little snorty, and he's a very needy little boy.
But I was trying to like look up some things to add to it, and did anybody say anything or like notice any kind of like weird feelings or like heavy energy or anything?
The people that we met there, they're some friends of my friends. They'd been going to New Orleans for a long time, like 10 years, give or take, at least once a year. And I asked the lady, her name was Stephanie, I asked her if she'd ever saw anything weird or felt anything weird in New Orleans. And she said the only time that anything like that had happened is that she was in a bar, and it wasn't even on Bourbon Street. It was somewhere in the Garden District, that when you would go into the bathroom, the lights would flicker off sometimes. And it was very random.
Ooh.
And it was a well-known thing, which I never found anything. I looked at it. I never saw anything about it. But supposedly in this – and it could have been a little dive bar type bar. Since they've been there so much, they know where all the little cool spots are.
Yeah.
But, yeah, supposedly in that particular building, there is a ghost that likes to hang out in the women's restroom to turn the lights off randomly.
Oh, how nice of them.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah, you don't need to just cut it off. But she said that was really the only thing that she'd ever really felt or experienced that was like ghostly or weird in New Orleans. So as a paranormal investigator, I failed.
Yeah, you suck.
Yes.
I was just curious because, I mean, I could imagine it being like super heavy there because like shit there is dark. And like I went on Reddit to try to find some stories, and I found a few things where people were saying that there's like a very heavy, pressing, like sticky energy there and like very uncomfortable. And I could definitely see that. I guess there's a Marie Laveau voodoo shop.
Yes.
And people were saying how it made them feel really weird when they went in there, and like dizziness, and they couldn't be in there long, like they had to get out.
We did see that particular shop, and the guy that I was with would not. He was like, nope, I'm not going in there. Nope, 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 nope.
Did he say why?
He never said why, and he's a very pragmatic person, so he would never say that he felt something or anything like that.
That's because he's scared.
It's a very weird looking shop. Like, not weird. Like, the shop itself was fine, but they have like skin masks, like face skin masks out the front window.
Oh, don't they have like shrunken head things there or something?
I can absolutely see shrunken heads in that place. Oh. I wanted to go in there, but he was kind of, you know, so I was like, okay, well, whatever, you know, but yeah.
You're fired.
I know. I'm sorry. I was along for the ride.
You could have went in by yourself.
It is true. What I need to do is I need to learn how to be a better one. Like, this is my first one. You know, the first one, you got to learn what you can and can't and should and shouldn't do. I'm learning, Laura. I'm learning.
Okay.
So, you know, after a previous conversation, I guess I can talk for a whole hour by myself.
I know. I was thinking that. I was like looking at the time. I'm like, oh, you're doing pretty good there.
too funny.
When I was looking into things, I just found a lot of people saying that there was like stuff moving around, like doors slamming, windows opening. They'd feel like their bed was being moved. And then there was one that I read where a ghost picked up their pizza and threw it on the floor. I'm just like, this place just seems crazy to me.
You know, like I said, I didn't see any of that, but we did stop at a pizza place on Bourbon Street that had almost as good as New York style or as Pennsylvania pizza. The slices were huge and they were delicious.
So if you're going to say Pennsylvania pizza's good, I mean, compared to Tennessee, yes, but it depends on where you get it. But yeah, New York is definitely way better for pizza because like it's like there's 10 pizza places around here and it's like they all suck. I mean, come on.
Well, I mean, around here,
but, yeah.
All I have is like chain restaurants like Pizza Hut, yeah, Papa John's. Yeah,
that doesn't count.
I do have a place called Donato's, but it's Chicago style instead of New York style, which is fine. Chicago style is fine, but yeah, not the same. But this place, I wish I remember what the name of it was, but theirs was way more like New York style, like the big, huge pieces that you basically just have to fold up and eat them. And,
yep.
And the one I got was called Cajun Hillbilly or something. It was like spicy alligator and mozzarella.
What?
Yeah. It was really good, though. It was really, really good.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I did have a really great time. We are planning to go back next year around the same time. We should have a little bit more extra time next year because we did so much this time that we can maybe do a ghost tour next time or, you know, something along that line so I can see some more of the more interesting places of New Orleans.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
Heck yeah.
Well, I don't know. That's about all. Well, I don't have anything else. I don't know. Didn't have anything anyways.
But thank you, everybody, for listening to me to, recounting my adventures. And the next episode, we'll be back to our regular scheduled program of spooky, scary, and or historical.
All of the above.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you, everybody.
All right, guys. So if you have a paranormal story that you want to share with us, email it to us at midnight_inthemountains@yahoo.com. Hit us up on Instagram. Oh, yeah. Also, please share and subscribe to the podcast or follow the podcast or whatever your platform does, and give us a 5-star rating and review if you can, please, to help our show grow. All right. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.